And welcome back to our Christmas night program. We're going to take your calls with Scott's Cole Bubba, the miracle stories, questions, and miracles as well. And we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
Hello, Coast audience. This is Karen A. Dahlman, and I'm wishing you and yours a merry little Christmas now.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas.
Well, that's good old Karen Dahlman, who loves Ouija boards. Stay away from us. Scott Cole Bubba with us as we talk about his work with Physicians Untold Stories. Scott, where does prayer fit into some of this? Did any of the physicians get prayer because of the things that happened?
Yeah, there's a number of stories about prayer, George, and I think probably one of the most interesting was Harold Adolf, who was a general surgeon who decided to commit his life to helping those in poor countries. So he ended up in Ethiopia, and a little hospital in Ethiopia, and spent his career there for a number of years. But one of the things he found, George, is that after about 6 or 7 months, he was one of the few doctors in this whole region of Ethiopia, and people would come in day and night with these most horrendous things that had happened to them. One of the things he found was that women that couldn't deliver a baby would sometimes rupture the uterus, and they would come into the into his clinic and hospital, and they'd have to have emergency surgery. So you can imagine, here's a guy that's operating on people 7 days a week from dawn till midnight, and after about 7 months he was totally exhausted. You know, he felt like he couldn't go on. He was going to quit. So every morning he said a prayer, and this particular morning he said, Father, something like, I try to do your work as much as possible, but I'm absolutely exhausted. If you can't send me a surgeon that can take over and do what I'm doing, I'm going to have to leave today. I'm just done. And so, interesting prayer. Normally it wasn't as
it works.
Yeah. So he went to surgery that morning. About 2 hours later, there was a knock on the door, which is his wife in the surgical suite. She had a person with her, and it was unusual that the wife would show up because she was afraid. She didn't like the sight of blood. She would pass out when she was, you know, in the operating area. But this time she was bold enough, and the person that she was with happened to be, of all people, a surgeon that had come to take over for Harold for about a month. And when the surgery was done, he talked with the surgeon, Moskowitz. Was Dr. Moskowitz was his name, and he said, "Well, how did you happen to show up here? You know, how did you know that I needed someone?" And he said, "Well, I've always wanted to do about a month of charity work, and I decided a couple months ago to do this, and so I didn't know where in the world I would go, so I did the scientific method." He said, "I took a map of the world, closed my eyes, spun it around 3 times, and put my finger down." There it was.
Dowsy.
Ethiopia.
It works.
It works. So he actually gave Harold a nice break for a month. Harold was able to complete his 42 years of charity work in Ethiopia and operated on thousands and thousands of people and saved many, many lives.
Remarkable.
That prayer was answered in an incredibly quick manner, and many of the doctors have had those kinds of prayers answered like that.
I want to grab a story from one of your next books about an airline pilot. This is an amazing story, Scott, if you tell us.
Yeah, you know what? It really is, George. And I was privileged to know him, and I saw him in my office, and he told me his story. And it was a sunny day on July 19th, 1989, that Captain Denny Fitch, a United Airline captain, became a household word. And he was in every newspaper, radio show, and television show that day. And this story begins with Captain Fitch as a trainer. He was training on a DC-10 airplane, and he was really expert at that particular airplane. And after the training week was over, he was flying back to Chicago and went to the Stapleton International Airport in Denver to get on the plane. And, you know, these guys can take planes wherever, you know, whatever plane they want to. They get free flights, obviously. And so he went to the first terminal, the first gate, and the plane was leaving like in 10 minutes, so he had an opportunity to jump on that plane, get home real quickly, and he walked into the terminal, walked into the gate, and stood there for a minute, and then decided to turn around and not go into that gate. He has no idea what made him do that. That was a plane leaving right away. He could have been home quickly, and he decided to walk down the concourse, way down to another plane that was leaving at a later time, and he decided that was the plane for him. That was a DC-10. He was on board, flying home. About an hour into the flight, there was an explosion. The engine exploded, and there are three engines on this particular airline, two on the wings and one in the back. It was a back engine that exploded. What happened, George, was a fan blade then flew off the engine and severed the three hydraulic lines in the plane. Now,
jeez.
So they had no hydraulics. Now, hydraulics control landing gear. They control the steering mechanism. They control pretty much everything in the plane is mechanical. So he was sitting there as a passenger, recognized there was some problem. He called one of the flight attendants and said, I understand that there's some problem. I could tell the way the plane was flying. And he said, go to the captain, ask him if he wants me to help him, because Denny Fitch was trained on the DC-10. The interesting thing, George, is that what they were working on right before he took off was the hydraulics.
Uh-huh.
Denny okay. Fitch had taken an interest in a prior crash that happened in Japan on a DC-10 that had a hydraulic issue, and he was particularly interested in that. So here he is, directed to this particular flight, the only person in the world that could help out like he could. He immediately took over the controls of the plane and discovered that in order to make it go up, he had to gun the engines, make it go down. He'd back off on the engine speed. If he wanted to turn left, he'd have to gun the right engine. If he wanted to turn right, he'd have to gun the left engine. So here they are over Iowa flying this DC-10, totally disabled. They radioed to San Francisco, where they had the all the manuals and the people that would help with the on flight disaster, and they all of a sudden became silent because they realized these were dead men they were talking to. No one could land a plane. No one could do anything with a plane that had no hydraulics. Mm. They would run out of fuel and they would crash.
They were done. Yeah.
They were done. So here's Denny Fitch, doesn't believe that, and he's going up and down. The plane would make 360-degree turns sometimes, and they decided to land it at Sioux City Airport. They were going about 200 knots, which is much faster, descending very quickly, and he, through just an absolute miracle, was able to land the plane. It was a crash landing. They landed the plane, and they saved. There were 296 people on board. 185 survived that crash. Denny was badly injured. His lung was punctured. But they've tried to reproduce that in a simulator again, and no one has been able to do that feat.
Had he not been on that plane, everybody would have died.
Everyone would have died. And why he was directed to that plane was an act of God, I'm convinced, and he was too.
Let's take some calls for you. Let's go with Frank and... Laughlin, Nevada. Hey, Frank, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks for taking my call, Mr. Norrie.
You
just
too,
had something
Frank.
Maybe not as dramatic as that. I had a rollover accident in Roseau, Minnesota. That's up by the Canadian border.
Yep.
That was about March in 07. And it was black ice on a road. I had my mind on going to a cafe. And it was ditch farmland out there. And so I hit the black ice and I lost control. I just flipped over into a field. And I missed the telephone pole. There's nothing else around. And I kept flipping over, and I felt like something was enveloping me, protecting me.
Mm-hmm.
I can't explain it. And so it finally stopped on its roof. It flipped over about three times. And after it did that, I don't know what the heck to think. I didn't know if I could move or anything. But the back window was blown out. The seatbelt was unhooked. And... my glasses are on the, I don't know how they were on the dashboard. Okay. So I don't know how that happened. But anyway, I was able to crawl out and I was all right. And I went to a house out there and I called the cops because they don't lock their house. But in the meantime, a ranger went by to look at the car. It was a Buick, O's 88, 1983.
Yeah.
And he said he didn't know what the heck to think about it. It was crushed. It was like, and then the highway patrolman took me to the hospital, and I told him I have a little bruise. And so I had some x-rays, and I just had a bruised pelvis.
God, you lucked out on that one.
I can't believe it. But as I was flipping, I thought something was enveloping me. And I don't know why. I just had that feeling. So I felt, and I was 63 at the time. I'm 77 now.
Thank you for the story, Frank. And Scott, tell me about these angelic interventions as well. Did some of the doctors come across that?
They did, George, but I've got an interesting story in relation to that flip over. One of the docs was in Manrique was his name, Luis Manrique, a doctor from Peru, is now an infectious disease specialist, was in medical school, and decided to go out to the bar one night and had a few drinks, and on his way home, the driver of the car started to get a little bit crazy. Now, the night before, it's interesting, George, Luis had a dream. The dream was that he would not be unhurt. And it was a kind of a strange dream. And while they were driving home, they were going really fast. And they came across a bridge. On the other side of the bridge, there was a very steep turn. And the car flipped over multiple times. Now, the thing that happened right before that was Luis decided to buckle up his seatbelt. And the driver said to him in a very stern way, "Don't buckle your seatbelt." Those were the last words that the driver would say. When the car flipped over, the driver was thrown out and killed. And Luis was moved over for some reason from the passenger side to the driver's side. When he woke up with the car upside down, he looked over to where the passenger side was, and the entire roof had caved in and crushed.
Oh, the passenger side. He would have been smashed.
He would have been smashed, totally killed. He was totally fine. He was not injured in the least. He was able to run to the nearest police, fire station, get the fire department to come and rescue the other passengers in the car. But he was totally unhurt, I should say. And that's exactly what he was, this premonition and this voice that he heard in his dream said, "You will be unhurt."
What a story. First time caller Kay in Lexington, Kentucky. Hi, Kay. Merry Christmas.
Hi, thank you, George, for taking my call.
I hope my
phone will hold up. It's not been working too well today.
So far, so good.
Hang up on you. You know it's the phone. It's not me.
Okay.
Okay, well, I have only been on Coast to Coast and found you March in 2020 after a car accident, but I'm home. But I just really enjoy you so much because of the fact that you are the nicest to all the callers, and you are so intelligent, and so you're my favorite one.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to tell you about my medical miracle here, if my phone will hold up. This was 21 years ago, and I was in bed, and but I was wide awake. I'm a college instructor, and I was working my lesson plans, and my husband was asleep. And all of a sudden, I kind of like heard this voice that said, "Call your son." You know, we have one son. And I thought, well, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. And then I thought, well, no, my husband's not talking. I thought, my gosh, God's never talked to me before.
Yeah.
He hasn't since, but he did that night. And so then I said, well, no, I'll wait till morning. No, no, call your son now. So I called, and he was very, very ill.
Oh, my.
And so I was able for him to get to the hospital. And so then after he was at the hospital, of course, I immediately went from Kentucky to Florida where he was. He's a professional volleyball player, a beach volleyball player. So anyway, I got there, and they said, well, you know, we can't save him. He only had 4 hours to live at the time of the phone call. His liver has zero function, and there's just no possibility. And so they said, we do need to tell you that he is green. And I said, well, yes, I sort of expected that. But when I went in, I was just shocked because the thing that got me was his urine bag was black. And having worked at the VA hospital for 20 years, I know that, you know, when the urine's black, it can't go back because most patients will dye it brown, and black is it. But I just couldn't let my son die. So I put my hand on his. He was almost in a coma. And I said, if you can hear me, wiggle your hand. He did. And then I said, if you know it's your mom, wiggle your hand. And I said, look, you don't win. You don't lose volleyball games. This is the fight for your life, and this is the plan. I'm going to pray. And you're going to fight for your life, and God's not going to let you die. So I laid my head down in this bed. The next morning I woke up, and the urine was brown.
Whoa.
Brown. And I went out, and I was cheering, and I went to the nurse, and she said, you know, that's not possible. That's not medically possible. I said, I know.
But it happened. It happened. And how is he?
She came and looked, and about all the doctors came in, the nurses, about 50 people came by because a miracle had happened.
Tell me he's okay. Is he okay now?
Well, yes. We didn't know what was wrong with him till the labs came back, and it turned out that he had eaten at a Texas Roadhouse 90 days before that, so the incubation was 90 days, and he had hepatitis from this Texas Roadhouse. And he'd gained that. He had that, and then my husband is a virologist. And well, so he called the CDC. We sent the people up there. They closed the roadhouse forever. And yes, my husband, or my son, rather, survived. And now he coaches volleyball.
You saved his life, Kay. That's a wonderful story. And Scott, you have a friend who was a doctor who died of gastric cancer, but in a very strange way, something happened with him.
Yeah, this was. A good friend who actually operated on my neck, and diagnosis was made. It was very interesting that he presented with what looked like gallbladder disease, and when they operated on his gallbladder, they found a little piece of cancer on his gallbladder, and who read the slides was actually the head pathologist, which is his wife at the time. Can you imagine a wife reading
the cancer diagnosis of her husband?
Yeah. So he lived for 6 months. Before he died, he was able to give me a phenomenal story about how he saved another fellow neurosurgeon. His name was Doug Johnson, and the neurosurgeon had been skiing, had a terrible skiing accident, and clotted off his basilar artery, which is the artery at the back of the brain, which controls the brainstem and the back of the brain, and that has been universally fatal. What was a coincidence, again, you talk about coincidences, George, about 2 months before that, he felt he had to go to a special meeting that they went over how they're starting to do TPA for basilar artery clotting. And this is a new procedure they'd never done before. Now it's become standard, but at the time it wasn't done. So he decided to do that. He had to get permission from the hospital, the hospital lawyer, the hospital board directors, but he was able to do that. And they gave the person TPA and actually saved his life. And so what a coincidence. But then, you know, unfortunately he lost his life to cancer. He was quite a Renaissance man. He loved his country, George, and as a 45-year-old neurosurgeon, he joined the Navy, was assigned to the Triangle of Death in Iraq.
Oh, my gosh.
Of Marines, and served his country for a year there. I was so worried about him because he's a phenomenal neurosurgeon, but what a person to do that. It's incredible.
Well, that is amazing. We don't have time. He wrote a letter about his experience. We're going to end our program tonight with a letter from Michael, which is about the Korean War, but it's a dramatic thing as well. Scott, where do people get your book, Physicians Untold Stories?
Amazon probably is the best place. It's become an Amazon bestseller, and we're excited about that. And it's actually going to be published by the largest publisher in Russia for the whole Russian world in January.
How about that? Okay, we're going to come back and take final calls with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, of course, we will have our sound-off open lines for you on Coast to Coast. In addition, miracle open lines and anything you want on Christmas night, because that's the way to do it. And welcome back, George Norrie, with your final segment with Scott Kolbaba as we talk about his work, Physicians Untold Stories. What's been the feedback from doctors, Scott, since the book came out?
It was surprising, George, because everyone was sitting on the edge of their seat wondering what was going to happen, and it's been incredibly positive. And what's been positive is doctors are coming out with more stories, and also patients now feel that they have permission. If their doctor can tell a story that's so unbelievable, that they can share some of their stories. And I've had some very interesting stories from patients, and other doctors have too, about these kinds of spiritual experiences or miraculous experiences. So I think it's given everyone a little permission to share these stories.
They're getting comfortable to come out and tell you about this.
I think they are, and patients too.
That's great. Okay, back to the phones. Let's go to Joe, Long Island, New York. Joseph, Merry Christmas. Hey,
Merry Christmas, George and Scott. Yes, Scott, I'd recommend a movie called Frozen from 2010 about these college students that got stuck on a ski loft. And it's kind of rough, but it was interesting. You know, wolves and so forth. But my question is about angels. Now, taking a couple of interesting ski stories, any given situation, you know, there could be 15 major variables. Now, you're focusing, say, on the skiing. You don't know what the other variables are. You're not anticipating them. And maybe angels are aware of them and are anticipating them, either to alert you for danger or for something good, you know, the better part of the slope. So if you look at even the movie It's a Wonderful Life, Clarence anticipated that George was going to jump off the bridge and jumped in himself and had George rescue him. So he knew George still had that mentality to help others, even in his own distress. And then I'd also ask you with angels about the Book of Tobit, the angel Raphael, which was considered to be a matchmaker, helps people find a companion, but also helps people on their adventures or as they travel.
Mm-hmm. Joseph, I believe that there are angels that direct our path. Sometimes they do it without being visible, and sometimes they do it when they're seen. There was an interesting story about an angel that Dr. Heitzler ran into, and his wife was delivering their fifth child and was having a little trouble with the delivery, and she was about ready to get a mask of anesthesia that would put her into deep sleep. Now, Joan, who's the name of the woman that was delivering the baby, Dr. Heisler's wife, had been incredibly close to her grandmother. Grandma O'Hanlon was her name, and she lived with Grandma O'Hanlon for a long time. They bonded incredibly well. The love between them was unbelievable. And when Joan was about ready to deliver the baby and put the trilene on her face for anesthesia, Grandma Helen came into the delivery room and stood there at the foot of the bed, and told Joan not to take the trilene. And so Joan pushed it away. No one realized, Joe, that about an hour before she went into labor, Joan had a large meal, and about 1 minute after she pushed the trilene mask away, she vomited the entire meal. Had the mask been on, had she been unconscious, she would have died very likely from aspiration pneumonia. And it's interesting that the Grandma Hanlon, the love between Joan and Grandma Hanlon had transcended time and eternity, because Grandma Hanlon had died 22 years before that.
These miracles just keep popping up, don't they, Scott?
They really do. I think they're all around us, George. And I think, you know, the things I included in my book were the major miracles. I think a lot of people have these small miracles that happen to them all the time. And I think if we are aware of that and we look for them, we're going to see them. We're going to see little coincidences. Like you said, George, there's no such thing as a coincidence. And I think those are the many miracles that we all face all the time.
Off to Cape Cod, Massachusetts, Wynn is with us. Hello there, Wynn.
Hey, George and Scott, how are you?
Good. Good to have you with us.
Have you both been to Cape Cod?
I have been in my days when I used to go to Boston all the time.
When we've been to Eastham about 10 times. We're going there next summer. We love it there, and that's where the miracle happened that gave me the idea that my mother was looking after us with the rhubarb pie.
Oh, nice. You play golf at all?
No, I don't have time for golf with seven kids and a crazy job like I have.
Well, let me give you a story which I'm extremely proud to tell.
Okay.
Tell it. But December is a December that I have that I don't think many people have. First of all, my background is Navy. I did 30 years.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
An officer, and I had a distinct privilege of working with a fellow named Jacques Cousteau, who you remember probably.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
Right?
Sure do.
He taught me something about life which I think always stuck with me, and that's the intensity he showed with it. But let me give you this two-part story. First of all, doesn't deal so much with me. It deals with my son. Over 25 years ago, he was diagnosed with diabetes. And it got serious over the years. And 25 years ago, we were told that he had to have a kidney transplant. And the problem was he couldn't afford to be on the waiting list, which at that time was 3 years. So we're sitting with the doctor, and the doctor says, I'm afraid the bad news is we can't find a donor. Now, I'm 87, and at that time I was in my 60s, and the doctor looked at me, and I said, well, wait a minute. You've got somebody sitting right here. And he said, well, you're a little old for all this. And I said, what's the problem? He said, you've got to go through 24 batteries of tests.
Wow.
And to shorten the story, he says, if you miss one, you're out. I said, let's get started. That's the intensity. And I passed all of them, and everything was fine. And we went through the surgery. It came out fine. It came out great. Matter of fact, we were at Mass General Hospital, and the doctor walked in the second day, because usually you're in there more than 3 days, and the kid's in there for 10 days. And he walked in and touched the wound area I had, and he says, you're going home tomorrow. So, and I don't take pain medications. I've never been ill. I have the same breakfast every day of my life. Still play golf. No beer, no coffee, no booze, no nothing. So I'm a healthy guy. Well, the upshot is that he's now 25 years into it. By the way, a little side story. At that time, I was very afraid of this, as he was.
Of course.
So I went to a place on Cape Cod in Falmouth called Nomska Light. Ever hear of it?
I haven't.
The lighthouse?
The lighthouse, yes.
You meditate, and it's a beautiful place if you ever get a chance to go there, and that's my place to go and sit. So I went and sat and said, we're both afraid of this, but I got to do something to inspire the kid. Shorten this up a little bit. I go to the Red Sox office. We go every year, and I walked into the office, and I said, I got one for you folks. Is there any way I could do something with you folks to inspire my son? Told him the story. This is the time when Roger Clemens was there.
Right, good pitcher.
They brought me in. They brought him in and said, you got to be here at 5 o'clock this afternoon. We were there at 5 o'clock. We went down to the dugout with him, met the whole team. Roger Clemens got an autographed ball. They put us in a special seat, and they said, you're going to be on SBN tonight at 8 o'clock, so please call your friends. Well, that inspired the kid like crazy, and that, I think, was a factor in the success of the operation. Now, fast forward to 25 years later, in the last several months, my son has a massive heart attack.
Oh, geez.
So we've got to go to the hospital. Now, he's scared to death, so are we, and he's got a triple bypass coming. And one of the things I do with Doug is, you'll never quit, Doug. You'll never stop. You'll never quit. I won't let you. And I gave him a big hug, and I said, you'll be fine. He went through the operation and came out the other end. We're in there. It's chaotic. Now, here's the upshot of this. Talk about coincidence, George. Here's the upshot.
Okay.
We're in there. The doctors are around. And one of the doctors comes up to me, and he says, I know you. He said, we talk about you all the time. I'm the doctor. Now, this is 10 o'clock at night.
He's the kidney doctor, right?
I'm the doctor that gave your kidney to your boy, and he's going to be fine.
Jeez.
What a story.
That is.
Here's the latest. The latest is simple. His creatinine level, which you're aware of, I'm sure.
Right.
His creatinine level started going up like crazy. So I drove into the place where he was, and I walked into Doug, and I gave him a big hug, and I said, Doug, I whispered in his ear, no, it's not. It is not going up. It's going down. I got a call from him this morning. Dad, my creatinine level is normal.
There you go. You're a miracle father, I'll tell you that. But those stories happen all the time, Scotty.
They really do. These are stories that happen to all of us. It's not just the doctors. It's everyone has a story like that, and I think every family does too.
Tell us about the physical exam on Santa.
Oh, you know, that was I do some physical exams on some some important people. I've had congressmen and so forth, but the most significant one, I think, occurred a couple of years ago. There was a blizzard in Chicago, and I let all the staff go home early, and I went back to my desk to wait for the last patient, kind of put my head down because I was exhausted from the holiday. And all of a sudden, I heard some sounds in the waiting room, and it was a ho, 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 and then the louder ho, ho, ho. I ran out to the waiting room, and there he was, the jolly old elf himself, all dressed in fur from his head to his foot. It was naturally fake fur. Hello, he said. I remember you. And he brought me a marvelous Mike Bulldozer toy when I was a little kid. And I remember that toy was incredibly special because in those days, you didn't have mechanical things that would move and change directions. And it was just the most incredible toy I'd ever had. And then Santa said, can I get to my physical? Well, my keenly trained clinical eye noticed that his BMI was a little bit above normal. He was 350 pounds and 5 feet 2 inches tall, which is even by elf
tape. Whoa, that's obese.
So I said, diet's the first thing we have to work on, Santa, I told him, but I couldn't keep a straight face, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. George, his cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry, those were signs of his uncontrolled hypertension. And the beard on his chin was as white as the snow, but he didn't look a day over 300. I mean, he was quick to correct me. He was about 1,300 years old. It comes from a long line of longevity. I said, if I tell others like George Nuri about your physical, they're not going to believe me. What advice would you have? And he said something very profound to me. He said, tell them, he said, that I exist as the essence of the Christmas spirit. I exist as the twinkle of an eye, an orphan receiving a present for the first time. I exist as loving parents who sacrifice to make the holiday special for their family. I exist as a letter of encouragement to someone who's fallen on hard times. And I exist as the love of all mankind. I'm a hug, a pat on the back. I'm a loving smile and a squeeze of a hand between a grandmother and a grandchild. Don't be afraid to tell others about me, because I'm the antidote for this troubled world in need of the Christmas spirit all year long. Thanks, I said, and I went back to the drug cabinet, got 5 multivitamins, 4 blood pressure meds, 3 cholesterol pills, 2 cold medications, and a bottle of fish oil. When I went back to the exam room, I looked like a peddler just opening his pack, but in a twinkling, he was on his way out. The last time I took those medicines, he told me, I had visions of sugar plums dancing in my head. I couldn't blame him. After all, he was 1,000 years my senior. Just park farther away from the chimney, you'll get more steps, I told him. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team, gave a whistle. Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night. Suddenly, I woke up from my desk, and I realized I was dreaming, George, and I went out to the waiting room, and there I found on the floor a yellowed letter, and I looked inside it, and I got goosebumps when I saw it. It said, December 1955, Dear Santa, please bring Marvelous Mike this year. Love, Scott Kolbaba.
Wow. How about that? 1955.
That's when he had it. Yep.
Roger in Shingletown, California. Go ahead, Rog.
Well, George, hi. Merry Christmas.
Thank you, Roger. Thank you, sir.
You know, you mean so much to so many of us. I just want to say that
as I start this.
You work really hard.
That means a lot to me.
I just wanted to say I really appreciate it for myself. I can't speak for anybody else. But,
thank you.
You know, you must work so hard to keep this all going, and you're so appreciated, and I just want to say that.
Appreciate that, too. Thanks. Appreciate that. Have a good Christmas. We're wrapping things up. Only got about a minute and a half, Scott. Words of wisdom to people who don't believe in miracles. What would you tell them?
Just keep your eyes open and look around for things that are coincidental that have happened to you. There's been some strange things that have happened to me in my life that I never thought of until I wrote this book as being coincidences. And one of those was a thing that got me into medical school, and that is finding a professor that let me into organic chemistry class when the classes were filled, and that was what got me into medical school. And the reason that happened was I was standing outside his door to talk with him, and just at the same time, the two professors that were offering the class were talking about how they didn't have enough books, and I happened to know where the books were for the organic chemistry class. And when I told them about that, they allowed me into the class if I told them where the books were. And so it was a kind of a coincidental thing. So look for the coincidences in your life. Look for the things that seem a little bit strange, and you'll find that everyone in every family has had a miracle in their life. And look for the little ones that happen almost on a daily basis.
Scott, let us know when the next book is done, okay? We'll get you back on.
We'll do it, George. Thanks.
Merry Christmas to you. Up next, Christmas Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM.